dedicates 8 hours a day role-playing as a toddler.
I'm in baby mode on and off all day.
And Jess's daddy is caring for her.
I'm 20, but not really, because I'm 5.
Adopted mommy and daddy, who are totally comfortable with me being a little girl.
I identify as an 8-year-old girl called Denise. Therefore, I am an 8-year-old girl.
There you go, folks. I'm 20, but I'm really 5, as that gal said. Anyways, I don't get those people out there. God, but anyways,
dude, what? I would have wanted those cyber with what other shit that guy's into.
100%, I agree. Anyways, welcome to the MCU's Bleeding Edge. As always, an MCU Bleeding Edge style. We started you off with a great little clip there, folks, where you had to get you in the mood to talk about the next DC animated film that we're going to be talking about. And that, of course, is the film called Green Lantern Emerald Knights. That's right, people. Green Lantern Emerald Knights. Yeah. Anyway, so this came out in 2011. Of course, was a direct-to-DVD deal. This is a standalone film. It is not related to the other Green Lantern film that was before this. This is actually technically considered an anthology film because there are several stories going on throughout this film. This was also very similar animation to the other Green Lantern film. They used very similar animation, very much the same style, which I thought, you know, looked still great. And overall, this just is a very fun type of deal of a film, I feel. I was actually surprised after watching this, you know, it was actually really fun. I really enjoyed it. I liked the whole storytelling aspect of it. I do feel that it was a tad bit too long. I think it should have been like an hour and 10, an hour 15 versus an hour and 24 minutes. But still, it wasn't too shabby.
I think that actually, honestly, Cyber, I think there were one or two people that didn't come on because when I told them how long the running time was, and that was the problem.
Okay.
Yep. How long? What is it? 124 minutes?
Well, it's an hour and 24 minutes.
Oh, my bad.
It's 84 minutes long.
Okay. Still, though, honestly, is that the longest one we've done now?
I believe so. I do believe so. Anyways, yeah, so I do believe that this is the longest running one so far. Besides, I believe Doomsday was around the same amount of time too. I think that was around an hour and 20 minutes or so. Maybe even the Batman anthology one we did too. That one could have been around that time frame too.
This movie's kind of like that one in a way, isn't it?
It is very much so. A lot better. I feel constructed though. This one definitely the story. Actually, like the story portions are a lot better cohesive to the film, whereas that Batman one, it just went from one scenario to another scenario. There was really no in between, where this one had that in between.
What would you call that? I mean, I'm not even sure. I'd have to look up the definition of what they described that. But this is not a sequel to First Flight. This is a collection of tales on the Green Lanterns as a whole, like, you know, plural, told in a larger framing story.
Correct. Right.
So there's cohesiveness to it and whatnot, as opposed to the Batman deal where it was completely separate in each individual chapter.
Correct. Correct. Very much so. All right. So so this movie actually has quite an all-star cast of voiceover artists, which are really impressive, I think. This was directed by Christopher Berkeley, Lauren Montgomery, and Jay Oliva. And Lauren Montgomery actually has helped co-direct a couple of the other films as well, previous to this and even a few ones after this. But yeah, I thought they directed this very well, gave us a really solid film here. And I think that, like I said, I thought it just was very cohesive, the storytelling portions, and I was really impressed by that versus how they did the Batman one we did. So a few of the stars that gave their voices to this are such as Nathan Fillion, Elizabeth Moss, Jason Isaacs, Kelly Hugh, Roddy Piper, Arnold Boslow, Henry Rollins, to name a few, which I was like cracking up when I saw that Roddy Piper did a voice of this. I was like, holy crap, that's awesome. And I do have to say, I really like Nathan Fillion as Hal Jordan. I think he does a great job. I liked his voice in it. I liked how he presents it. He sounds really good as the Green Lantern. And I really appreciate like how his voice is very distinct. It gives it a very strong superhero vibe, I feel.
He has a very distinct voice overall, though, doesn't he, kind of?
Well, yeah, he most definitely.
Yeah, no, and I think you tell me, when the characters stand out more, when they're given more time, when they're the featured part of the film or whatever, right, of the story, you pay attention more to that voice acting. You do, right? And I think for me, like you mentioned, the consistency, you get used to that consistency with that voice, and then when they throw somebody else in there. Right, with Wonder Woman, right? And that one film, I didn't like Wonder Woman and the way she sounded because it was a different actress. That the other actress's voice was fine. It just wasn't what I was used to at that point for the DC animated films, Wonder Woman. That's all it was, right? And that her original voice, I believe, what's her name, that was popular in the 90s, that was in that sitcom, Felicity or whatever, was the one that voiced her at first. Yeah. She seemed to me more aligned with Gal Gadot's. Right, her voice.
Carrie Russell, you're thinking of.
Yes, I liked her as Wonder Woman. I like her voice, surprisingly, honestly. I don't know that much about her, though. I didn't watch Felicity.
She's been in a lot of movies over the years. She was in Mission Impossible 3. She was just recently in Cocaine Bear. I mean, she's been around the block. She had that show, The Americans. Which was very popular. So yeah, I mean, she does have a good voice. So she did sound not too shabby as Wonder Woman, because if you think about it, Gal Gadot has a very distinct voice because she's Israeli, and so that voice we kind of attribute to her now as being Wonder Woman. So like we're kind of looking for that when they do the voiceovers now. Versus like if you only knew Linda Carter as Wonder Woman, she had a very normal, you know, American accent. So it's like once you get used to that kind of certain thing, it kind of changes your perspective on those voiceovers, and you tend to lean more towards those that sound more like the counterparts for the live action form.
No, I think Gal, because she can speak Hebrew. I think that maybe it's possible that because she can speak Hebrew, that maybe that speaking it brings out the bass a little bit more in the voice. I don't know. I've only heard people up in New York talk Hebrew a couple times and whatnot and everything. I wouldn't be able to remember, but it's a possibility because she does have that little bit of accent. She does. And that's where it comes from. Right. You know, that and whatever her overall makeup is and whatnot, as far as like her heritage.
Yep. Yep. Most definitely.
How tall is Gal Gadot?
I believe she's 5'11".
I figured she had to be at least 6 foot or 6'1", something like that, yeah.
Yeah, I believe she's 5'11". I think that's what I looked her up one time.
If I was going to cast somebody to play Wonder Woman, I'd want her to be at least 5'10 or 5'11".
Yeah, you want to have that goddess look, you know what I mean?
Yeah, she should be able to naturally – that the actress should be able to naturally stand up against other male characters and not need to be – filmed in a certain way or whatever and whatnot to look the same height as them, right?
Yeah.
It wouldn't look right if she looked shorter than everybody.
Yeah.
Right? Like a la Wolverine.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
Right? 100%. It's just not a good look at all. Yeah. It wouldn't vibe for the Justice League for her. It wouldn't fit for her role.
Uh-huh. Very true. Very true. All right. So, yeah, great voice cast. And basically, this film starts off where we're introduced to the Abin Sur, and she's flying out into space after something. And as she's coming across this planet or star or whatever she is going by, she ends up noticing something, and all of a sudden a giant hole pops up. And all of a sudden these creatures come flying out of it and start attacking her, and she starts fighting them off. And at the same time, she's having a conversation with Kilowog. And as she's fighting them, all of a sudden they start to basically destroy her somehow by banishing her to wherever they're from, which happens to be these shadow demons that we come into contact with. And she basically ends up turning into like little pieces left in space. And that's when we go to, of course, the Green Lantern Corps, their base. And we're introduced to a rookie who is happens to be like Hal Jordan's kind of like kind of under his wing. Her name is Arissa Rabb. She's running late to her training, and basically she ends up getting there, and they have their kind of like little meeting and everything about what happened with Abensur, and basically they explain what happened to her, and that has to do with the Shadow Demons, which are basically run by this bad guy that has basically is reemerging after many, many years, Krona, as he's called, and basically that, you know, he wants to basically end the world, and that it's, you know, up to them to stop him. And so after they have that kind of that conversation and everything, and they explain what happened to Abensur, that's when the new recruit, Arissa, gets into a line and basically starts walking down along with Hal and Kilowog and all the other Green Lanterns. And that's when we come to our first story. So before we get to that first story of the first Green Lantern, what did you think about that beginning with Abensur and kind of those shadow demons and kind of that the head honchos there at the Lantern Corp explaining what's going on and who Krona is and all that kind of stuff. What did you feel about that? What did you think about that? Was there anything you noticed interesting, and how could you relate that to the comics at all?
Well, those are the Guardians, and you know, as always, like, look, you know, I want to say I feel like I'm in a place where I don't need to apologize or something or be over apologetic because I'm not a massive DC fan. Because by doing these reviews and whatnot and doing research and whatnot for them and whatnot in general, doing the gun, getting ready for the Gunn Safran stuff, I'm getting into DC more. And I've been buying DC comics because of Kendra and whatnot, everything, right? I went and bought that whole line of the new DC that's come out, whatnot, off of Batman with all the black covers. Whatnot, everything. I forget what they're called. I have them all in the other room and whatnot. I haven't been able to find backers and baggies to put them in, right, to protect them. And they're like really nice. Like they're very high quality. The covers are, I don't know what they're made of. They're glossy and everything and whatnot. They're nice. The art looks really good. And that's all the stuff she's reviewing, right, and whatnot. So I thought, why not get them just to be nice to her, you know, and whatnot. I could read them and kind of like understand them better and whatnot, right? Plus everybody's in there. Nightwing, right? The original Robin, right? They're all basically in there. The Joker, you know, I still haven't read all of them, so I don't know the whole gist of it. But basically, I'm learning. Now, the Green Lanterns, because we did First Flight, really in that one, we were very limited in, like, how many other Lanterns we ran into, right? There was Abensur, quickly, right? And then we saw Kilowog a little bit, you know, and we saw the Guardians, and we learned quickly what they're about, right? And that what their deal is. You know, they're sort of like the governing council. You know what I mean? Whatnot, that almost like the high council or whatever that kind of sort of guides the Lanterns. For a minute there, I had a really good parallel to them, but I can't think of what it was now. Either way. So basically they also are like almost like a library. Like they're a source of knowledge. You know, they've been around forever and whatnot and everything. They can answer questions, and they also actually hold trials and tribunals and things like that and whatnot. And they investigate things and whatnot, right? And they do a lot of different shit. Either way, you know, I believe when it boils down to it, they sort of, as a team, as a group, run Phalangium Corps. I mean, they're the ones that tell them, kind of alert them, know, and assign them on missions, let them know what's going down, for the most part. So for me, the only thing that I found to be, like, I remember that part. Where I got confused was simply the concept of the shadow demons and Krona, right? Getting back into the whole aspect of the rings themselves, like how they're fueled, you know, the whole negative, positive, you know, matter deal and all that kind of crap and whatnot. I don't mean to say that in like a negative way, but you understand what I'm saying, Cyber. Stuff gets a little complicated. How the rings are fueled, right? The batteries, how they work. There's a lot to it a little bit at first. So if anything, I'd say probably that it was a lot at first. They threw, like, to me, it felt like they were putting a lot out going on compared to the rest of the movie, where they really kind of slowed things down in the other chapters, sort of, if you want to call them that. The paces were different. As things went on, things got a little bit slower, I felt like. Then at the end, it picked back up, right? With a lot of action. So that's just where I was at first. I was kind of like, okay, right? I kind of need to bust out. The wiki fandom real quick and whatnot here and see who the hell these characters, some of these characters are. Right. I enjoyed it. I liked it. And of course I didn't know who some of the voice actors and actresses were at first, but I liked them. Right. I liked who I was hearing and whatnot. I mean, everyone sounded good. I could pick out, Hale's voice from Jump. I knew that that was the same voice. And then of course I saw who it was. Basically, for me, in general, I just love the concept of, like, any kind of vehicle where we get lots of lanterns, or at least a couple of lanterns as opposed to just one. I guess that's just what, from my experience so far with the Green Lantern deal, I like it when there's more than one. I do.
Awesome. Thank you. And, I definitely felt that beginning sequence, I didn't find it hard to understand. I didn't find it hard to follow. I thought it was pretty straightforward. And I thought that they did a really good job with that, especially, you know, letting them know you guys got to fuel up your ring before you leave, because we're going to stop that so Krona doesn't have access to it and all this kind of stuff. And I thought that they did a good job with bringing that to light and kind of giving you kind of that interesting kind of take. And
they had Owen involved too again, right? So they kind of, like, in a way, they almost kind of brought us back and kind of just gave us a quick dose just to remind us, right? Sort of the key facts of how the whole all this stuff works the way.
Kind of, yeah. Yeah, I would say that's pretty much what they were trying to give you, is kind of a repeat or kind of a reawakening to what goes on with the Green Lanterns a little bit, which I think that is, you know, very much what this movie is a lot about. It's kind of giving you an almost origin and history to the Lanterns is definitely what this film did. All right. So after that sequence, that's when we get our first kind of like little short a part of our anthology in this, and that's where Hal Jordan tells Arissa about the first Green Lantern, which basically gives you kind of the history of the Guardians coming together for the first time, discovering the power of the Green Lanterns, them assembling their first kind of ragtag team of Green Lanterns by giving them their rings. Kind of giving you a brief history of how the rings, because of the power, willpower given to them, they're the ones that decide who they go to next after somebody dies, a Green Lantern dies. And basically we get kind of like a little history into those first four kind of Green Lantern guys and how they took down this giant army of these people, which that I don't recall what they were called. Let's see here. which that consisted of Gahu, Watchit, Blue, the Dominators. That's who the bad guys were.
Yes.
They basically they're tasked with destroying the Dominators. And at first they were kind of overwhelmed by them. They're about to give up basically at one point. And that's when the one guy that seemed the most likely not to be a Green Lantern, he just decided to step up and say, hey, this power was given to us with will, so we can will it to do what we want it to. And he goes out there and starts kicking butt. And we end up seeing him like take out all these army, and then the other end up coming in and start helping too, and they end up winning the day. And that's where basically kind of the Green Lantern Corp has officially become. So basically after that, that's when Hal's finished telling the story. And, you know, that's where they're still in line. Jordan's finished telling the story. Kilowog's there. Basically, you know, she's like, oh, that was an interesting story. And basically then they start talking about Kilowog a little bit and how, and she's kind of like, yeah, I kind of scared of Kilowog because I've heard some stories. And Hal kind of like laughs and stuff like, oh, he's nothing really to worry about. He's a pretty decent guy. He could be a little rough around the edges, but let me tell you about Kilowog. So before we get into the Kilowog section, what was your thoughts on that first little segment? What did you enjoy about it? What did you like about it? And how did it work for you?
I'm trying to figure out which one was the first Lantern, the one that actually was able to generate the sword, right? I can't remember his damn name. It's driving me crazy, and I'm looking for it right now, and I can't find it. And then he passes on his ring, right, and starts the tradition, right? You know what I'm saying? Of the parting and giving of the ring, right? You know, to the worthy successor or whatnot, right? That the ring chooses, if I remember correctly. I'll figure it out in a minute. But Jason Isaacs is in there with Sinestro again, right? Henry Rollins is back. There you go. How about that? No, you know what? At first, I didn't realize that was a flashback with Kilowog. I was like, wait a minute. Why are we like shifting? At that point, I didn't grasp the whole. Well, yeah, I didn't get it. So at that point, I'm like, okay, wait a minute. I'm like, what up, Brian? Aren't you supposed to be at work, dude? Come on now. Focus on work. Don't worry about what me and Cyber are doing over here with the Green Lantern Emerald Knights, baby. And yes, this is about comics, essentially. We're talking about a DC animated film that is based off of comic books. That, a little nugget, Cyber, you probably already know about this, I already found it. Alan Moore is responsible for sort of quasi two of the stories or chapters of the film. He doesn't have any credit in the, right? That he isn't named in the credits or whatnot because he doesn't like that. He doesn't like to be attached to any sort of other media based off of his writing, which I did not know. Right? It's basically, let's see. It's Mogu Doesn't Socialize and the Abin Sur, right? Chapters or whatever, whatnot. Those are the ones that like are based off of storylines he wrote in the comics. I didn't know he wrote Green Lantern's ring like that and whatnot. I know who Alan Moore is, obviously. I would hope most of you out there, folks, which you should know who he is too, I would hope. He's not in Loki season 2. But I didn't realize that at first. I'm like, wait a minute, why are we over here? Like, how did we bounce over here from like the end of like the world to boot camp or whatever, right? But once I grasped what was going on, and then it was a flashback. Of course, I was lacing Angel Dust and crack and everything and whatnot together, you know, with weed and stuff, one of those type deals again. So, you know, we'll see some different stuff. And either way, I dug how, Mogu is, I believe it's Mogu, isn't it? Who is like basically the sergeant. I wrote it down here. Hold on one second. Yeah, so we are. Mogu. Sergeant Mogu. He reminds me of like your typical drill sergeant, right? Like what you'd expect from almost like a American Vietnam film almost, right? Or whatever, right? Like a, like that kind of movie. Like he's got that kind of vibe to him. With the accent, he's almost got an accent. He's got like a little accent to him and everything too, you know? And he's a badass. The drill instructor, the sergeant.
We're not on that part yet.
Oh.
We're on the first part.
Oh, okay. Well, doesn't it shift over to that?
Not yet.
Ah. See, look at that. Ryan,
I stopped before we got to the Kilowog shit.
I'm already fucked up, man. See, look, Ryan, you fucked me up, man. First I kissed a spider and shit and whatnot. Now you're over here fucking with me. You know, I'm just messing with you. Anyways, that's all right. You always have to follow the comments. I apologize, Cyber. You didn't go that far. You went to the point where Hale basically just says to the new, you know, what's her name about the new recruit, or to the new recruit, Kilowog is not a bad guy.
Correct.
Yeah, you don't know about. Yeah, okay. At that point, what my thing was I was, in a way, I wish that they almost would have just given us at least one sort of timestamp to kind of give us an idea of how much time has passed between first flight and now to that time. Because Hale seems so much more experienced and like so much more veteran in the corpse to me, right? And I always assumed that, like, especially as a human, considering first flight and how he was treated at first, right? As being a human being, kind of looked down on and whatnot and everything and scorned, right? I figured it would, if anything, it would be harder for him to gain more trust and like more, I guess, cred, right? You know, with the Lantern Corps. So it just that, I mean, don't get me wrong. I understand that he's Hale Jordan and whatnot and everything, right? And he's obviously, I know enough from the comments to know that he's a really good Lantern, right? I mean, he's very powerful. He can do a lot of shit. That's very unique to him, right? But at the same time, though, I just, it would have been nice for me to understand just a basic time jump, kind of in a way, like a rough one. Has this been 10 years since first flight? Like 15? You know, whatever. Either way. And then he's the only human, isn't he? I don't remember seeing another human at all. I mean, he's basically the only human in the corpse, isn't he? At least in this film. In this film. I don't mean in general. I know there's other human ones. I remember
as far as we see, I don't think there. Yeah, he's the only one.
No, I know we're going to get some more in the Gun Saffron stuff and whatnot. We're going to have other human Lanterns. And I apologize. I can't remember the one that they almost were going to do a series on Max about. But no, I thought it was interesting. I thought it was a nice sidestep or a nice sort of like direction to bounce off of the series stuff in the beginning to kind of go more. Hale kind of has like sort of a whimsical attitude about him, right? Like he's got a very positive kind of light-witted sort of like, you know, he's not arrogant at all. He just sort of like, you know, what's the word? Witty, right? He's kind of got a little flair to him. And he does have a little bit of pride, right? A little bit of that pride in him, which he showed in first flight, right? About him being a human and whatnot and everything and whatnot. He'll fight just like Kilowog if you fuck with him hard enough. So I just thought that was interesting. I really enjoyed the aspect of him as a mentor, right? In that role. So sort of, I guess, for me so quickly, right? Again, having not read, you know, hundreds of, you know, Lantern comics and whatnot and everything to work with the character.
Okay.
Oh, and it was also nice to kind of just start to get an idea for the first time of how the process goes of training the Lanterns, too, as we got into it.
Yep. Agreed. Very much so. So, you have some trailer or footage you would like to share, sir. How about we pop those on to give people a little intro into what we're talking about here, and then we'll move on.
Ryan, we don't have time for Hulk. You're talking about She-Hulk. Feminize the Hulk. We're not talking about the Hulk, son, bro. This is Green Lantern, man. Just because it's green don't mean it's Hulk, baby. Not right.
Stand tall, warriors, and charge your rings immediately. There's no mistake. This is just the beginning.
In brightest day, in blackest night, no evil shall escape my sight.
Let those who worship evil's might beware my power, Green Lantern's light!
When you shape the light of your ring, you walk in the footsteps of the First Lantern.
We've got one chance, and one chance only.
If it gets past Oa, he can annihilate any world, anywhere.
I am a Green Lantern.
I believe in destiny. All of this, everything we do, is a part of that destiny.
Wow, Cyber, that might be the best fucking DC animated trailer I've seen.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
That was great.
That was fantastic.
Powerful at the end there, man, with the music and everything and whatnot. That fucking shot in the logo. Shit.
Yep. Very well. Very
Maybe
well
some
done.
Advancements, huh?
Yep. At this time, I guess so.
Well, hey, all right. The fault one I got to work with is green and black, man.
Yep. Kind of like the Hulk. Purple, green.
You know where I was going with that, baby.
And, Ryan, guys, why did they go feminize the Hulk? Just like why they feminize everything else in this goddamn world is to appease those that need appeasing. That's the only reason they do it.
Look at how they feminize me. I'm not even drinking real alcohol anymore. I'm drinking fucking, light Arizona fucking... Like sissy, pussy, effeminized alcohol beverages and shit and whatnot. See how they force me down, Ryan? Right? There you go.
True. All right. Definitely we could talk about that, Ryan. We'll definitely get into that. Most definitely for you, sir. Especially with Edward Norton. Yeah, you know, he was good. He was good in the Incredible Hulk. But once again, if you allow certain things to go to your head, that's why you get pushed out of playing a certain role. Definitely Edward Norton boasted himself a little too much there.
He looks back at what happened and whatnot and thinks to himself, you know what? I have pride, but like I wouldn't have minded that fucking $50 million either.
Yeah. So anyways, so moving on. So the next story we are given is about Kilowog. Basically his training to become the sergeant he is today. So basically how Goza tells Asari the story about Kilowog and how he is with a few other rookies is learning how to use the abilities and stuff like that of the ring and how to use it and how to become a Green Lantern. And they have this sergeant that's teaching them stuff called Deegan. And Deegan tends to go outside the box or outside the realm of things that are considered safe. We'll say, and training his recruits. And throughout the process, we see Kilowog get kind of upset about that and basically accuses Deegan of not valuing his trainees. And basically, they kind of get into a fight. They have kind of like a battle out. And during this, all of a sudden, they get a message saying that they need Lanterns to come to the aid of somebody. To the nearby planet from the of the Kuns, and
Kuns
or Huns. I don't know. Maybe that K is silent. I have no idea.
There's a K. It's KH.
Kuns. Yeah,
it's essentially Kuns. Yes, you could say if you want to be nice. If you want to be PC, you could say Kuns.
Anyways, so basically, Deegan abandons Kilowog to lead the other recruits away to the planet where these refugees are that need assistance. And they go there to help to fight these invaders. While they're there, they're battling and stuff like that, and Deegan's starting to get his butt kicked. That's when Kilowog catches up and basically helps out Deegan, even though he has been mortally wounded. But before he dies, he basically tells Kilowog that, you know, the reason why he does things the ways he does is so that that his rookies realize how much, you know, how much ability they have, how they can use that ability, because basically your will is gone once you become a Green Lantern, he says. He basically says that you have given up your life, and now your whole life is dedicated to the Green Lantern Corps, and that doing this thing's tough way is going to make you a better Green Lantern and to, you know, be able to complete your missions. And so basically he leaves them with that kind of wisdom. Basically they're able to complete the mission, Kilowog and the other recruits there, and basically they end up, you know, saving the day. That's when it goes back to Jordan and Orisa when they arrive at the Border Patrol at the sun to await Krona's return, where they hear a prophecy of Lara, whereupon Jordan shares Lara's story. So before we go into Lara's story, let's talk about Kilowog's section. What were your thoughts, Jeff, on that Kilowog section? What did you like about it? You could go into more detail as you were talking about it earlier. And what did you think about Deegan? What did you think about the other Lanterns that were there? What did you think about Kilowog's kind of story of becoming who he is today? And what did you think about the alien planet that they went to help?
Well, I thought that it was sort of, I guess, if it's a six chapter sort of like with a main plot though type deal, right? I didn't realize it was that many. I didn't know it was six. I thought it was four or five. That's all right. It's no big deal, you know. But either way, I thought like that one was probably the most human, if that makes sense. Do you get where I'm going with this? Like the most humanized in a way, right? Like almost like how we talk about like Earth level or like street level characters in the MCU, you know, like how there's a lot of the times we feel like, you know, we hear a lot of people in the fandom that want more of that type of entertainment. They want more of those kind of like, you know, projects and whatnot, the Daredevil, you know, Falcon the Winter Soldier type stuff, Batman type stuff, you know, with DC. I felt like not only from that standpoint, from a cosmic level, if that makes sense, I felt like the dialogue, right, was much more what you'd expect from a human, right? Especially between Kilowog, right, and the sergeant. It really reminded me, again, of like what you'd see almost in like the sort of the basic trope of your usual Full Metal Jacket, right? Sort of like stuff you'd get in the 80s about Vietnam. You know, oh, Ryan, I'm sorry, man. I thought you were Ryan, my buddy that lives down the street, man. My bad. I didn't know you lived in another country. My bad, dude. Oh, you're talking about, we'll talk later. I even know you. Anyways, that's all right. But no, I thought that, like I said, it was a nice contrast and I felt like it flowed well with the rest of the chapters where they fit it. Because, you know, as you go through the film, as usual, it never lulls. There's never any real slow points for me. I didn't think there were any. I never sat and was like, oh shit, like, are they just going to talk forever? You know what I mean? It doesn't go like that. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, even if they start talking, they end up doing a flashback or something, right? And like something happens. You know what I mean? Like, you know, there's always activity, right? And so I thought that it was very sort of in a way, I don't want to know if simplistic it's a very simplistic trope that I've seen before where, you know, you've got the sergeant, the drill sergeant training his recruits, right? Raw recruits, calling him, what was he calling them? Posers, right? All this shit, talking shit, right? And like, you know, it was dope as shit that Kilowatt fought him. I thought that was really dope that he actually fucking like went toe to toe with them and shit and whatnot, that they accept that in the lanterns. In the corpse, like, whatnot, you can actually just fight your fucking sergeant. Like, that wouldn't fly over here. Like, that wouldn't fly in our military. You can't just fight, like, a sergeant. You know? That don't wash very well for you. I think you end up in the brig and shit like that for that kind of stuff. Yes, it is. It's in the Pennsylvania. Sorry, maybe we should go to Ireland and we'll do our SDC animated film review over there. Right? That'd be an expensive trip.
Totally.
That'd be an expensive trip, brother. Plus, I don't know about how I feel about the, how long's the flight? What? 14 hours or some shit?
I have no idea.
I think it's pretty far. Ireland is farther out, farther west than, the UK. Well, like, you know, than England or whatever, Britain. But either way, no, I thought it was very much sort of, a nice part of a of the you know, the ensemble chapters that make up this story and film, in that it was humanistic, it was grounded, right? Kilowog connected very easily with the sergeant because they're both emotional, right? Like, you know what I'm saying? And both traditional and like old school. And you know, I felt like the rite of passage was very much mirrored to the first lantern giving up that first ring, passing it down, right? That I felt that was symbolism. It was a parallelization again, you know, a sort of that they wanted to show and display in a different way. If you think about it, less powerful, less impactful, not as cosmically, you know, huge, yet still important and emotional, right? And personal. I think Kilowog even cried momentarily for a minute. Didn't he like actually kind of like let out a little bit of a, maybe I was tripping. I don't know, but I feel like he let out a little bit of a whimper. No. Okay. Well, he handled it like Kilowog would handle it. Right. You know, and, it was obvious that he felt very humbled by like what he was told, you know, call the lantern and whatnot and everything. Right. And he learned a lot. He did. He learned in battle when the Guardians called on them, you know, and said flat out like, hey, get your recruits and it's time to go fight. You got to go defend this planet, right? The cunts are coming. You know what I'm saying? So they got thongs on, bitch, so watch out. You know, no, it wasn't, those weren't the cunts, actually, not yet. But no, there's a lot of different alien species and races in this movie. If you didn't notice, if you watch this, you'll notice, you'll see posts. There's a lot of them in there. Some weird looking ones too. But either way, basically I thought it was very humanizing. I thought it was probably out of everything and whatnot. It was probably the most impactful to me in terms of the actual character interaction and dialogue and whatnot, other than the last part with, Ebon Sur, right? And, what's his name? Sinestro. That was almost like some Mendelsohn, like Samuel L. type shit.
Okay. I can see that a little bit. Most definitely. Yeah. Most definitely. But yeah, I would say that section for me, it was very enjoyable. I enjoyed it a lot. I thought it was a really great section of the film. I liked how it was very, the storytelling was done well, I thought. And I liked how they had the action, and I like how they had kind of the drama, and how they had kind of the sad moment there where Deegan dies. And I liked how, you know, Kilowog kind of automatically took over when Deegan died. And I thought that showed, you know, that's the type of person, you know, Kilowog is, and that he is, you know, that's why he's become the sergeant he has become. And so I thought it was a great little story of getting to know a little bit more about Kilowog and kind of his becoming a Green Lantern, which I thought was really well done.
No, and I want to just point out to you, Ryan, as far as the comics go and everything and whatnot, right? Cyber and I aren't heavy DC comic readers and whatnot and everything. I've read some. I'm starting to read some now. But mostly when it boils down to it, you know, you can't do this kind of stuff and you can't review this stuff and whatnot and do a good job and whatnot and also enjoy the films, enjoy the, you know, the movies, whatever, you know, the TV shows. If you go in apologetic and worried and scared that you're going to say the wrong thing about a character or whatever, whatnot, and this and that, like Kilowog is really popular, right? Some of these lanterns are very popular. I know that much about in the fandom, the DC fandom, like they're very well known and they're very popular. The Green Lantern comics are some of the best selling comics in the history of DC. You know, so, I mean, they're not in the top, you know, tier, but they're up there. They're in that top 10. So I'm just saying, you know, and he's, you know, the Green Lantern, Hal Jordan, is one of the core, you know, Justice League members from the beginning, essentially, right? I believe. So at that point, really, when it boils down to it, you try to pay homage to the comics by at least trying to understand and know who these characters are, right? And paying attention, learning their names, whatnot, and everything, right? But at the same time, though, there's nothing wrong with learning on the fly, right? And hey, this stuff's supposed to be entertainment. Like Cyber just said, you made a good point, Cyber. That isn't probably the funnest part of the entire movie. Right?
Excellent.
Yeah, I mean, there's not much humor than that chapter.
Well, certainly. I would agree. Most definitely. All right. So, great talk there. All right. So, moving on to the next section. Basically, we are given a story of the character Lara. And basically, in this particular little short portion of the film, we find out about her first solo mission, and that basically she sent back to her home world to address the crimes and wars and stuff like that committed by her people. There, she ends up finding out that it was her father that caused it all. She ends up getting into a fight with him, and they have had a lout with his cool armor that he wears, and she's using her powers. We kind of briefly throughout it shows kind of her basically getting the ring when he thought he should have gotten the ring at the battle where that the one Green Lantern sacrifices himself and ends up it goes to Lara instead of to her father, in which he kind of holds a grudge against that. And so after it kind of gives us kind of that backstory there a little bit, goes back to the fighting. And we see them fighting and, you know, battling it out and stuff like that. Her kind of struggling and stuff like that. And basically, they end up where she eventually defeats him in combat. And in order to keep his maintain his honor, he commits ritual suicide. And basically, he ends up dying in Lara's arms, that's where we get kind of the, like, I feel the first kind of, like, crying moment in this animated film. Basically at this point, that's when while he's dying in her arms, claiming that she was Jade's true protector, not him, she, you know, basically makes that known. And then after the story's finished, we go back to the Border Patrol, where every lantern has is there waiting for Corona's return, and with the apparent exception of Mogo, whom Ariska asks who Mogo is, and Jordan explains. So before we go on to Mogo, what was your thoughts on the Lara section of the film? Did you enjoy it? Did you like it? Did you hate it? What did you think of Lara? What did you think of the story? How do you feel it applies to this film? Was it a good choice to add that in there?
No, it was my least favorite part of the whole thing. I didn't care for it. I felt like it was out of all the chapters that it was the most ill-fitted one in terms of, like, you know what I'm saying? I don't think it really would have mattered. Maybe if you put it somewhere different, it would have been different. I don't know. in a sequencing standpoint, like maybe if you had sandwiched it with a different set of chapters or something like that, it could have been different. But maybe, you know what, Cyber, in this case, maybe because I don't identify with the characters in a personal way, right? In any long-term way, right? Besides today, like today, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, like I don't know much about them. At that point, when you have that sort of conflict where it's like a father or daughter kind of thing like that, to that level, where it's like fucking like, you know, gods or like, you know, cosmic being level type stuff like that. You know, I mean, if you don't really like know the characters or have read source material or read books or watched, you know, some other stuff or whatever, read the comics, you're really not going to get stuff like that. Is supposed to give you what? It's supposed to flush out some sort of, you're supposed to get entertained. You also get the emotional and like aspect of it, right? Like, not in the same way as Kilowog. Right. Or like, you know, that whole deal, totally different, more of a, you know, deception, you know, familial, you know, betrayal, you know what I mean? Whatnot. Right. Like, you know, whatever, that kind of deal. And just to be clear, if I ever become a Green Lantern, I want to have my ring to fit on my nuts. I want a ring that goes in my ball sack, on my nuts. Right. Up tight so that like, you know, at the tight top of them. Right. I would put it on my penis, of course, but like, you know, it's not there anymore. After Shield episode 7, it's gone. It's gone now. So, you know, it just finally no, it actually came back. It bounced back. It did. I was revitalized. Anyways, Ryan, listen, I'm sending you a message right now and letting you know, man. As long as you don't come on the show too drunk, bro. We love to collaborate with other people from other countries. We don't care if you're like an actual creator like we are or whatever, whatnot. I've been trying to put together a UK cyber knows, but I've been trying to loosely put together a UK Aussie sort of like, you know, group on Facebook or whatnot, like a chat and a group and whatnot, where we could all, you know, with US creators, where we could all collaborate and talk to each other and whatnot, and just have a place to be able to at least try it and schedule it and whatnot. It's tough with the time difference. You're even farther away than people that are like in like the, you know, again, like in the more Eastern part of the UK, you know, or Western, I'm sorry, whatever. But either way, we've tried to collaborate with like two different creators from Ireland. It's always been tough for us. So yeah, we talk about the MCU. I'm thinking about adding another show just to cover the MCU, because we cover so much other shit, right? Cyber, what the fuck, man? We have to fit it in now sometimes. Like,
that's what the Monday show is for.
I always wanted to do Walking Dead stuff. I couldn't help myself. We're covering Marvel, but we can't talk about it every Monday.
Why not?
There's DC stuff going on too, right? There's Star Wars stuff. You know, I'm hell into Star Wars right now.
The DC shit, I right now, until I see something substantial from Saffron and from Gunn, it right now the DC is dead to me.
Well, you know what? As far as the MCU goes, I'm not. This is a quick aside, sort of. I mean, Ryan, we appreciate you being in the comment section and whatnot, and joining the show, so whatnot. So we're happy to go ahead and oblige you for a moment, whatnot, and sort of step back and say hello. And yeah, of course, we love the MCU. Can't wait for Captain America 4. I pray to God and the devil that the Marvels will be at least not garbage, above garbage level, right? Like maybe a C- or something, at least. You know what I'm saying? Right, Cyber? Why not? It doesn't do you any good to want it to be fucking horrible. Right? I mean, seriously, what is the point of that?
No.
No.
I never go in thinking if it's horrible. Unfortunately, sometimes it just ends up horrible.
People don't get that, though, sometimes. I saw this asshole bunch of group of people on TikTok a couple weeks ago. The kind of people we don't like, really like to fuck with in the fandom. I have no problem with them, but we don't fuck with them. Because they are the ones that like think Captain Marvel is the best movie ever, and the writing was great, and all this shit, whatnot, everything, all this crap. And you know, if you even go in there and say anything negative, they automatically just categorize you, right? Bam, you know what I mean? Instantly, right? So you got, but I'm good though, bro. You know me, Cyber. I'm slick. I know how to word my shit and whatnot, everything, whatnot, to where they can't touch me or fuck with me, right? Because I say flat out, I love Monica Rambeau. Right, I'm like, go look at the shows. You'll see I picked Ms. Marvel last year as my top Disney Plus series that came out. Right, So don't tell me I don't like Ms. Marvel. Don't tell me I don't like Monica Rambeau. I don't like female Marvel characters. Fuck you. Look at my goddamn background, motherfucker. You know what I'm saying? Not only do I talk about caring about balancing the panels and shit when on the shows, look at my background. There's more fucking women there than anything. The fuck? And I didn't do that on purpose. It's because the Cyber did that shit and She-Hulk teamed up and She-Hulk downed me and then they talked to Cyber and shit and they conspired against me. Right? See, Ryan, how I got fucked over like that?
What?
Yeah.
I did not conspire with She-Hulk against you, motherfucker.
She-Hulk locked you in the cage in the basement for a couple of weeks.
You're getting it now.
You're down for whatever.
Now I am going to work with She-Hulk.
You would do anything at that point to get out of the cage and shit and whatnot, right? You know, so at that point, you kiss the spider. But, you know.
What's with you and kissing the spider, bro? Stop
kissing
the spider.
God, I can't help myself. I rewatched that show where Andre said that shit and whatnot. I almost fucking laughed my ass off, dude, when I heard him say it. There's the 7 review. Holy fuck, that shit was funny. I'm sorry, dude, but it was funny as dope. It was funny as shit. Anyways, I can't even finish my stupid thing to Ryan. But no, Ryan, we love the MCU. We got good stuff coming up. I don't know. I like Secret Invasion. I think, Cyber, you like Secret Invasion, right?
No.
Okay. Oh, okay. You didn't like it. All right. I liked it. Andre doesn't like it. Cyber doesn't like it. I haven't asked Kendra. I'm assuming now that if Cyber said that he doesn't like it, if Andre doesn't like it, Kendra doesn't like it probably too. I talked to John earlier today, but I didn't have time to ask him. Right? So, it'll be interesting. Now, this is the fun thing about doing these shows, Ryan. I could honestly end up finding out, like, by the end of this weekend, that I'm the only person that came out of all the reviews of Secret Invasion that actually liked the series. So, you know.
Secret Invasion was a hot mess that was, once again, feminizing once again.
It had potential, really, a lot of potential for a minute, and episode 5 just killed it.
Yeah, I had a lot of potential, and that series finale. Holy fuck.
Yeah, that was horrible. Yeah, we all knew, though. I think all of us, well, you and I knew, right? John knew that, like, it was not a good sign. And so did Andres, too, that episode 5. You can tell who pays attention to these Disney Plus series. It's not a good sign to have episode 5 be a filler episode in a 6-episode limited series. That's not good. Right? I still wanted to believe. But man, that final battle, bro, I don't want to rewatch it. I don't. I honestly don't even want to see it again.
Horrible.
No. And I'm not going to tell you about Aaron. I'm not going to tell you, Ryan. I'm not going to tell Cyber about what Andre's doing on the MCU's Bleeding Edge report for our Loki. I'll tell you. I come up with this cool concept, right? 2-segment structure for the show. We're going to finally do some re-reviews of the first season of Loki in our first segment. We're going to do 2 episodes for an hour. And then in the second segment of the show, we're going to do our segment previewing season 2 of Loki in 3 parts. And it'll be my job to try to figure out how to interconnect that from show to show. Make that work. But I'll figure it out. It'll be fun. Is that dope, Cyber?
It's okay.
Oh, okay. Thank you. For me, I thought that was actually very creative. Well, there you go. When your penis is only that small, I mean, your ability to be creative is very limited. You know what I'm saying? Right?
Yep. Very true. Very
they
true.
They wouldn't even accept me in the Lantern Corps and whatnot. You know what I'm saying? Evan Sur would be like, his penis is extremely small and he does not deserve the power of the Lantern.
There you go. All right, so getting back to the section we were talking about. So what did you think about that section of was there anything else about the Lara section that you would like to mention?
If they could have added some kind of angle where, like, how when you go to, like, Disney World or, like, whatever, or, like, you're going on a ride, they have, like, the thing, like, where you have to be, like, a certain height to go on. Instead, it's, like, for your penis size. Right, like you go through and whatnot and everything. If your penis sticks out and like past the thing, you can go on the ride. That's what I was really thinking right now. If they could add that into that section, I probably would have raised my C- or whatever the fuck I gave it or whatever, or you know, or like whatever. I would have changed it up to a C plus 0.75.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
Sorry. I'm all slammed by my fucking third wave feminist 4.2% alcohol fucking content, fucking green tea alcoholic beverage over here.
He's lost his mind, people. It's all good. He's fine.
I should have worn my Shield t-shirt, Tyber. I should have worn it. Motherfucker, why didn't you tell me?
My bad.
It's green. I should have worn it. This would have been the perfect night to wear it.
True.
It would have triggered Ryan, too.
There we go. Yep. Anyway, so, okay, awesome. I definitely didn't think that this section was any good. I didn't care too much for it. I thought it was kind of they could have had a better Green Lantern in there. And I definitely think that, you know, if they really wanted to explain Lara's story a little bit better, they could have done it a little different and made it a little more entertaining. Because I felt it was kind of like a letdown that it was like her father and backstabbed her and that kind of stuff. And I was just like, kind of like, this is okay. You know, so yeah, I definitely agree that this portion they could have kept out. They didn't really need it, I felt. So moving on to Mogo, which this one, Mogo, I'm still blown away by this because basically I feel like Ego, the planet, this is like a ripoff of that character too. But yeah, I mean,
Ryan, what are you drinking, bro? Gasoline? I'm sorry. Go ahead, brother.
So anyway, so when it comes to the Mogo one, Jordan explains about Mogo and how there's this warmonger named Bolfa Funga who basically seeks out to fight and kill all the universe's most powerful warriors.
Dude, his name was so awesome, was so fucking stupid that I just was like, fucking, it was like Cloud World the whole time.
And so when he gets to his latest opponent, you know, basically the defeated person basically tells him you haven't defeated everyone, that there is a person that is undefeated and that nobody's ever defeated, which is named Mogo. And basically the one guy that he is battling, he basically tells him where he can end up finding him. So this Bolfunga goes out to find this guy, goes to the planet and basically goes out and tries to search for him. And, like, starts doing all these ploys and stuff like that to get him to come out and flush out Mogo and stuff like that. And then, basically, eventually, Bolfunga ends up discovering that the whole planet is actually Mogo. And, basically, the bomb he puts on there basically just destroys him and doesn't bother Mogo at all. And so, basically, Ken, that's our introduction into who Mogo is. We get kind of that. There's a lot of kind of like action going on in this little portion of the film, which I thought was pretty fun. But once the story is finished, that's when it goes back to the Oa's son, where Hal and Orisa are, and they are attacked by Krona's shadow demons, and then rescued by Sinestro, who speaks out of the prophecy that Oa will be destroyed, and relates the story of Abin, which is Abin Sur. So before we move on to Abin Sur's little section, what did you think about Mogo? What did you think about Mogo's story? Did you like it? Did Ego the living planet come to mind? And what did you think about that whole section?
I thought he looked like fucking MODOK. He was like the lantern. Are you talking about the one that looked like MODOK?
No. Mogo the planet.
Oh, the planet. I mean, no, I wasn't getting the same vibes as like the Kurt Russell freaking Ego the Living Planet deal or whatever, whatnot, and all that. But like, I did enjoy the fact that there were a lot of cosmic elements that I thought were, for, at least in the animated DC version, were well done in this, right? You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, it can become a little bit like, for me, it can become a little bit too like oversaturated. When there's too many lanterns on screen at the same time, especially when there's like one background behind them, like a black background in space, right? And that's it. That's all you see is all the lanterns in green. You can see their different distinctive detail, like features and whatnot, but it's just so many of them and they all look the same. Like they all wear the same color and whatnot and everything. It's very, to me, I don't know about you, Cyber, but it just doesn't really do much for me. That whole, you know what I'm saying? It almost takes, I'm not saying it doesn't take away anything from like the scenes or the action or like the, you know, the legends themselves. I'm just saying that the image itself, when I see them visually, I enjoyed the cosmic parts. I did. I liked them. Right. Like, I thought to myself during it, I was like, you know, I remember in a time in the MCU when, like, in 2 weeks we were going to start getting some real hardcore stuff happening, directing us into the cosmic part of Marvel and the MCU and whatnot. Well, never happened. You know what I'm saying? And like nobody's really done anything with it. So I'm thinking, I hope we'll have to see. I mean, I don't know. It looks like it'll end up being in the Fantastic Four with Galactus and Silver Surfer and shit and whatnot and everything and Nova. Where they're going to finally break into the cosmic and shit with that. If that makes sense, it should be the Fantastic Four. You know, that would be comic book accurate for them to do it that way. I apologize, Cyber. But I enjoyed the cosmic aspect of it and whatnot. Again, I like the fact that because they had the different chapters, again, even though I know the whole thing happens off Earth, right? And like there's a lot of space shit going on and whatnot. There is sort of, again, like the way that they did the Kilowog, you know, and with the sergeant and whatnot chapter, they had stuff that like gave you a grounded sort of feel to it, right? Where it was planetary, they were like, you know, on soil, just not on Earth, right? Yet they would then go cosmic and go fly through space and shit and whatnot and like go fight. Right. And like save a planet and whatnot and everything and fight off an invasion and shit and all that. Right. And Lanterns die too. They do. They die. Like it happens, you know, and honestly, the overarching thing, I just want to say that whenever I see them do it, usually it's well done. They do a great job with the writing, with the deaths and whatnot, and everything. Right. The final things that the Lanterns say and whatnot, and everything is good. It's like quality shit as far as I'm concerned. And I also like the fact that they have some good female Lanterns too. It's good. It's cool, right? Balance is only good if the fucking women, the Green Lanterns are cool, the women, female ones. If they're fucking douchebags, hey, at that point, the balance sucks, right? It ain't good balance. But what are you talking about? Ryan, look, man, I'm telling you right now, I'll drink you under the fucking table on the show, bro. What, are you kidding me? You don't even know you don't know about me, man. Nah, Ryan, look, man, I can't even drink 6 pints. I don't drink beer anymore, dude. I have a bunch of Corona out in the fridge, and whenever I buy lime, I'm gonna do a show. I'm gonna drink some Corona because it's taking up so much space in my fridge. Corona takes up a lot of space. I don't drink beer at all, man. And this is alcohol. This is new. I didn't even know about it. I saw it for the first time today. It's actually literally Arizona, the 99-cent Arizonas that you usually get. It's 5% alcohol. See, it's lightweight shit. Not like my Red's Wicked, right, Cyber? That shit's stout. It's like 8.5, 8.2 or some shit.
Yep.
No, but I don't drink. I don't get, you can't get slosh drunk and like do these shows, man. Like ask Alan, the Blankly Clinton podcast, like how that plays. No, I'm just playing, Alan. You're good, bro. You know what I'm saying? But no, honestly, you can very easily look really bad really quickly. By being intoxicated and making content. Cyber knows I learned my lessons about that, doing that stuff and whatnot years ago and whatnot. Staying awake too late and getting drunk as shit and whatnot and then making content towards people. Not a good thing to do. Not, doesn't work out. Good thing I wasn't too big back then. Everybody might have got crushed. But no, Ryan, look, like I said, man, just hit us up. We're on every social media, bro. Except for fucking Snapchat because I hate it. Right. And we're also not on what do you call it? Whatever that stupid one is, what is that dumbass one? Oh God. The one that fucking like pushes transgenderism and shit and whatnot and everything on kids and shit and whatnot and everything and all that crap.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
I don't even fucking know. Whatever. Anyways, we're on all the major social media ones, except for the ones that have, like you said, Thoroughly Feminist on them and shit and whatnot, and like leftist and shit. We don't do any of that. But and just hit us up. We're under the MCU's Bleeding Edge, right? If you want to talk a bunch of shit and whatnot, come on the panel and talk your shit. So Just be prepared, though, and whatnot. I hope you got some thick skin and some tough nuts, some big nuts. Because me and Cyber will rip you up, motherfucker. And then Andres will step in and fucking put you to coma afterwards with a 60-minute man fucking delivery on his ass, on your ass. Overall, like I said, Cyber, I like the cosmic aspect. I like the fact that this was a very diverse sort of laid out. Like I mentioned to you in the private chat, sort of almost like, I guess if you want to, I don't know if a contrast would be the right word. I don't know if you would know a different one that would be better, but you get where I'm going with. We got the origin story of Hale, right, in First Flight. Now we got the origin story of, like, essentially, in a way, not really organically, but in a way for us, in the DC animated film universe, this was our origin story for the larger corpse. Right, and I like that theme. I like that. I think that's cool. I do. It's simple, and I like that. And again, my problem really, when it boils down to it, Cyber, is that there's so many lanterns. Right, it's a little bit tough for me with the names and whatnot. It's hard to keep track.
Gotcha. Excellent. I appreciated the MOGO section. I liked that we got to be introduced to this interesting planet size Green Lantern, which I thought was really cool. The MODOK guy you were talking about comes a little bit later, but
he was great.
I definitely like this character, most definitely. MOGO totally makes me think of Ego a little bit. That's what made me think of.
Visually, it was a good chapter. It was. Yes. And I think that probably you mentioned earlier consistency more than once. You probably, I think, Cyber, you enjoyed the fact that the animation was consistent.
It was very much so.
Yeah. And the Batman one was just, you know, every single director that they had come in, they had different animation for each part.
Correct. All right. So moving on, we get a little Abensur little section where.
I want an Abensur t-shirt, baby.
Where basically Atrocitus is being captured. Abin and Sinestro discuss Atrocitus' prophecy, which this whole section we get like this action sequence where they're fighting this like red colored character that almost looks like a bug. I feel he looks very insect like, and
that's actually very nice of you. That's nice of you to the character,
and he basically they end up like fighting, and we see them all like. Battling it out, stuff like that, Sinestro and him, and stuff like that, and eventually they end up capturing him. And he basically, prophesies that Sinestro is going to basically cause imminent death to everyone, and that he's going to destroy the Lantern Corps and all this kind of stuff like that, and that he's going to betray everyone and stuff like that. Atrocitus also spoke of Abin's imminent death, which happened at the beginning of the film, and that the formation of this new feeder-based Lantern Corps, it was going to basically take over and rule the world. Refusing to believe what this Atrocitus is saying, Abin imprisons Atrocitus. So basically that happens, and then that's when we get to the section, which is basically the end of the film, called Emerald Knights, which is what this film is called. So basically this is when finally Akrona emerges, and basically we have this all-out battle with the Shadow Demons in the core. Basically we end up seeing heavy casualties happen here, and while regrouping... that's when Arisa devises a plan to kill Corona with an equal or greater amount of matter to counter this antimatter. So she basically comes up with this idea of using this matter to counteract Corona's matter and keeping him from coming through to their universe. And so that's when the corpse basically end up falling back to Oa and to push it towards the sun. And basically, we end up seeing them and them battling and stuff like that, pushing towards the sun and stuff like that. And that's when the Shadow Demons kill more of their number until Basically, that's when Mogo arrives finally. We get to see Mogo in action, and he is there to help to assist his comrades and helping to kill Corona, destroying the Oa. Basically, they end up succeeding. In the aftermath, Mogo agrees to become the Green Lantern Corps' temporary base until they build a new Oa, while Orisa receives an entry in the Book of Oa for her ingenuity. And basically, that's how the film ends, with them basically saving the day, destroying Corona, and Orisa becoming officially a Green Lantern Corp. So, Jeff, what were your thoughts on the conclusion of this film? What did you think about the Abin Sur section? What did you think about the conclusion with the Emerald Knights section? Was there anything you didn't like about it? Was there anything you did like about it? I know you keep mentioning how you feel that there's way too many Green Lanterns in this. And just what was your overall thoughts on the conclusion of this film?
Well, that last female lantern and whatnot was definitely in my top three female lanterns that I would bang. Right. I can tell you that right now, along with the one that like with the father and whatnot for her name, Lara or whatever, whatnot. I would bang her too. Cause I would bang animated characters. I would, I've mentioned it before multiple times. I would definitely love to bang an animated character, female character. It'd be hot. Right. I'd actually prefer, you know, but also, that's okay. I'll save that for another show. But no, honestly, man, I thought, you know, really, I thought that, in a way, again, the stuff with, I mean, that's the most I've ever seen Abin Sur, right? Really? Reem, you know what I'm saying? Like, I've never really seen him in anything other than like him dying. Right. You know? Like he's a badass, man. Like watching him go hands and shit, whatnot, when his battery went out there towards the end and whatnot, it was like 3%. It was nice. Right. And he did some pretty sick shit too. Like he was talking hella shit. You know what I mean? Like, you know, which I liked, but he was talking in like Lantern Corp's way, you know, in like their style. Right. Almost like elegant. Right. They, you know, him and Sylvester give me like, British vibes. Right. Like they speak what we would like, what you and I would like view, like, you know, original English. Right. Or whatever you want to call it. What do they call it over there? You know what I'm saying? Before we
America, where?
Over in fucking the UK and whatnot, they speak like classic English. We speak like Americanized or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. No, we do. We you know, because we're a multi-pot, so like that's why. You know, that some of us still have pieces of Shield's penis in our mouth still jammed in between teeth and shit too. So that'll fuck you up. But you know, anyways, but no, overall I thought that you know, the final chapter, it was like, it sort of reminded me of that scene in WandaVision in the finale between White Vision and the created Vision. You know, with the poetry and everything and whatnot and everything and thesis and whatnot and like the ship and all that shit. Their dialogue, their rapport, even in like a combative, like, you know, way, right? Like against each other. Right. There's that thing with the corpse where like, even if you have a problem with another one of the corpse members and whatnot, then you're still a part of the corpse together, right? You're still lanterns, you know what I mean, whatnot, right? So there's like that bond. At that point, I kind of noticed and whatnot, you know. And at that point, that's sort of a rub for some of them more than others, you know what I mean? Like that sort of bond and whatnot, it can hinder them a little bit. Overall, I thought it was great to see, you know, flashbacks, like the use of flashbacks. Right. The use of like, you know, going back, you know, I don't really remember Cyber. Would I be correct in saying that in all the, would this be what, this is what, the 13th DC animated film we reviewed?
11th.
11th. I apologize. I was close. All right. Hey, I could have said 15. All right. Or 16.75. I didn't.
Okay.
Okay. Anyways. So, no, but, overall I thought that it was just, you know, again, it was interesting and it was cool, the, you know, to give the corpse and give Green Lantern their own vibe, like a real present, tangible vibe in the animated series where, like, you know, like now I've distinguished almost their own little, like, you know, niche sort of in what we've seen. Right. Right. And I enjoyed it. I enjoyed honestly, I did think there were too many lanterns just from a standpoint, not from an entertainment standpoint, from a standpoint of trying to review it and keep track of their names. That's all that was hard for me, was trying to figure out who was who at times. Right. Cause I liked some of them and whatnot, but I couldn't remember their names. You know, so either way, that's the only part that bothered me. But the lore, the lantern lore, I'm not going to say that it gets me like Dune, right? Does almost or whatever, or like Game of Thrones got me, you know, toward like House of the Dragon became so appealing to me. But it is interesting to me. It seems like something that if maybe you got into it and whatnot, maybe found the right shit, right? Or like read the right comics or whatever and whatnot or whatever, you know, you might find something in there that might catch you. There's a lot of lore there, right? There's history. There's other lanterns that we don't that have died, right? That are, you know, present, sort of, I guess, in like the real time of like the DCU or like the DC anime or whatever. So overall, I thought that, again, the final section was probably the most like adult on a and serious, like dramatic, yet had action sort of part of the whole film for me. Right, it wasn't like massive planetary action, like you mentioned and whatnot. Right, it wasn't like, you know, hella like 17 lanterns, you know, beaming motherfuckers, you know, fighting whole, you know, whole alien races off. It was more of like a, you know, it was more of a one-on-one kind of thing, in contrast between two different lanterns, two different characters. And I just, like I said, I thought that they had a really good rapport, right? The writing was good. The voice acting was good. And they're good characters. Sinestro is a really interesting character. I like him. Right. You know, he's not like really evil. He just has different viewpoints. He has different, he believes in different things than the other lanterns. He sees things. He thinks things can be done a different way. Right. At the end of the day, he cares about the integrity of the corpse. He does. I believe at the end of the day. But overall, the whole thing was really good for the most part. And I wouldn't want to try to like divide the chapters up and whatnot. Like I said, it just, you know, the one with the, just so I pronounce it correctly. Larry, is it Larry's? Is that actually how you pronounce her name?
Larray
and the father. That for me was the weakest chapter of the movie. Everything else, and I'm not saying I didn't like it, I'm just saying it was weakest, right? With probably the end chapter and the Kilowog, you know, boot camp shit being like my top ones.
Huh?
I said the one with the daughter and the father, Lara, or however you pronounce her shit. Lara, right, was probably for me the weakest chapter out of the group, and then it was probably the end one, right? And then the Kilowog, like, you know, at boot camp chapter, that were probably the strong ones for me, the ones I really liked the most.
Cool, excellent.
Evan Sir was my Monica Rambeau Award winner.
Oh, okay. Abin Sur, people. Monica Rambeau Award. So then, what would you give it an overall rating?
I wish I could remember what I gave First Flight. That'd be very helpful right now. It's actually kind of difficult. I would give it a 8.25. I would. I don't want to give it an 8.5. I don't think it's better than First Flight. I don't. I think it's equal. Like they're very close, right? So hopefully I'll go look. I want to see. What do you think? What did I give First Flight? Do you think, if you had to guess, Cyber?
I think you gave it around a 7.58. I think.
Okay. I liked it. I know I liked it.
Yeah, I know you liked it. I don't think you gave it a 10, but you definitely gave it a high, pretty high, you know.
For me, I did. I don't drop 10s left and right.
Yeah, I know.
No, we don't jerk off to anime, man. What the fuck are you even talking about, man? Seriously. And jerk off to anime. The hell is that? No, man. Yeah, I jerk off to anime right after I jerk off like with a dog and fuck dogs and shit and whatnot and all that. Like have sex with animals and shit. You know? No, we don't get down like that after 6 pints.
Maybe you don't. Anyways. Anyways, yeah. So, yeah.
Oh, wait. Oh, I'm sorry. You know what? There is that hentai shit, isn't there? I apologize. I forgot about all that. My bad.
Yeah. There is animated porn, sir. So
that's right.
I'm sure you've looked at animated porn. So
Ryan, I have before. My bad. I forgot about that and all that and everything. No, I was thinking you meant like Naruto and shit and whatnot and all that. Swords Are Online and all that. Right. For a minute. I'm tripping.
Anyways. So, yeah. End of the film thoughts would be I thought it was decent, okay. It didn't keep my attention as well as it could have. And overall, I thought it was okay how they ended it and how kind of what they gave us at the end there. It wasn't my favorite, but not as good as First Flight, but definitely an interesting way to end the movie and to give us kind of a final kind of battle sequence. So I have to give this, I would give this an 8. Out of 10 for me for this one. I still thought it was very solid. I liked the storytelling of the other stories. And overall, I thought it was pretty good film. And so I have to give it a solid 8 on this bad boy. So, yeah.
Oh, that's not bad. Solid 8?
Yeah.
Hey, you know what, Cyber? You know how I feel about that. I like the fact that we got close to each other. That's pretty good.
Yeah, right? Yep.
Yeah, most definitely. No, and I think that's pretty fair. Again, First Flight, I think is better. I do. I thought it was a good origin story. But I'll tell you what though. I mean, I don't know when we're going to be able to do another DC animated film review. I don't know if we're going to be able to squeeze in another one or two or whatever by the end of the year. It looks like we have a pretty full schedule. You know, like as I was really like digging through our schedule earlier today and whatnot and everything and sitting in the hot box and kind of like filling in some information that I didn't fill in from when you and I were getting in there the one night. Yeah. Right. But, I want to point out just really quick, folks, that we are, you know, going to be tackling a lot of shit here coming up and whatnot. And I'm going to go ahead and probably put out a video, short form and long form, and just kind of lay out almost like our own little fucking, you know, gun deal or whatever, or Feige deal or some shit and whatnot. Where I'm just going to lay out what all we're covering in like the next couple of months because we're going to cover a lot of shit. A lot of TV series episodically, a lot of them, right? Echo. Which yet we're going to do episodically. And I've met a bunch of different creators and whatnot, everything that have told me that like they would have done it that way too. Right. Like they wanted to do it that way or whatever, but you know, the other coast didn't agree or whatever. Right. Whatever. We're doing it. Oh shit. As I drop my drink and shit and whatnot. See, Ryan, I appreciate you, bruh. But Cyber Knight Shark, sir. What are you most looking forward to, my friend? Are you more looking forward to Ahsoka more or Loki season 2?
Loki season 2.
Yeah, I can't blame you for that. I can't. You know, but I'll tell you what.
Ahsoka, I mean, you know, it's going to be fun to see what they do with that. I love Rosario Dawson, so. But yeah, definitely Loki season 2 is the next one I'm really looking forward to.
Well, I watched Clone Wars, so that really kind of like got me like you know connected more to Ahsoka, right? Because she is basically like the biggest for me. She was the biggest draw of Clone Wars. She really was. When she drops out of the show, it really kind of falls off, right? I'm looking forward to watching Rebels. I'm almost there. I'm in the last season of Clones. No, we got a lot. Cyberman, we're almost at 30,000 subs, baby.
Yep,
it's nice. It's nice to be a gangster and OG fucking YouTuber and shit and whatnot.
Gangsta.
Cyber Knight Shark, I'm pulling up your YouTube channel for your plugs, brother.
But, oh yeah.
I am gonna also go ahead and start doing. I've already mentioned it on other shows. When you've been sick and whatnot and everything, not feeling well. I've already been mentioning it, so I can carve it out if I wanted to. That I'm gonna be doing the giveaways, the raffles. Right, with the Amazon gift cards that I bought a shit ton of. And I explained sort of like how we're going to do it and whatnot and everything and, you know, that whole gist and all that. But, sir, where are you actually at right now? It's been a minute. You're almost at 700 subscribers.
Yep. So that's still at 686. Most dropped my most recent trailer reaction there of Napoleon, which is an upcoming Ridley Scott film coming out in November.
Ooh.
And can't wait to see that. It's going to be good. And then, of course, I've been keeping up on my shorts, done a few shorts and stuff like that recently. One for Meg 2, because I saw that on Sunday, which was really fun. And, some other stuff, Big Top Pee Wee, Sliver, Spear, Meteor Man, Like Man.
We did Spear? No shit. Oh, man, that's a good movie.
So
I forgot about that one, came out in 98. You know what? When we talked about Sharon Stone before and whatnot, I forgot all about that film.
Yeah, it's a good one. And I'll be having more stuff up soon. My Barbie review will be up soon, and a couple trailer reactions to some upcoming films as well. My Meg 2 reaction will be up eventually. And just keep on trucking, keep on watching, keep on subscribing. Don't forget to go check out Andreas' channel too as well. Let's get us all both to 1,000.
There you go. That's right. And I will try to assist folks. I can't wait to give away these gift cards. Well, not. It's gonna be fabulous. It'll be so much fun. And hopefully we'll get to surge these guys over 1,000 so they can take off. And hey, I just want to shout out, and I can't wait to actually go check out. I want to shout out TV Startup and whatnot and everything for setting us up on Roku. We're live right now on Roku. Now, since I have not, actually started heavily advertising and promoting us being on there, which of course, Cyber, I'm sure you grasp, is sort of going to be necessary for us to bring our audience over there and whatnot, or they can actually start putting it out there and start putting stuff out in print and whatnot and all that we're doing it or online, which I will, but we're on Roku right now. So like, if you wanted to go on Roku right now, right, and literally just go in that fucking search thing, you'll find our logo right there, right, and our lives right there. And before you know it, all of a sudden, I'm also going to synchronize all of our content from YouTube and everything and whatnot, and Rumble, and it'll all be up there too, right? And there's gonna be some interesting shit going on over there, man. I can't even wait to find out what me and Cyber and fucking Ryan are going to figure out for pay-per-view for us. What does Bleeding Edge even do for pay-per-view events? Fuck, man. Good thing I'm recruiting OnlyFans women and shit and whatnot. And I've been going to the strip club lately purposely to find guests, right, for the show. So, right, we reviewed Emerald fucking Nights or whatever, whatnot. Well, I went to Emerald City last night. Cyber, what do you think about that, baby?
Jesus right? Christ.
Come on now. Hey, you know what our motto is over here, Ryan. Four hands or nothing, baby.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And yes, Cyber's the only one wearing an authentic DC hat because my shit's just some stupid shit.
You're wearing a DC shirt, though, so you're good.
It's funny, though. It's funny. And your hat's better than that. You know what? Actually, I like the color of my hat. I do. I like the camo.
Yeah, camo's good.
It is. No, and I love the gray DC shirt. I do. It's dope. I love the gray color. And I'm 50-50 on Loki Season 2 and Ahsoka. I'm excited for Ahsoka.
Cool.
All right, man. Well, hey, folks, listen. We love you out there. Hats off to Cybernetic Shark, right? For, being my co-host and whatnot. Everything. Shout out to Perry Ramsey. We hope you're doing all right, brother. Shout out to everybody out there. The Podcast of Champions. We love you, right? We're gonna have to wrap up, unfortunately, our Infinity Saga review without you probably at this point, whatnot, so we can get that bitch done. Because I goddamn want to review Infinity War, bitch, and Endgame here at some point. I haven't rewatched Endgame since I watched it in the theater the last time. So, but in the meantime, please again support Cybernetic Shark's YouTube channel. Please support Andre's the Pop Culture Guy. Get him over 1,000. I'm gonna try to aid them, but you can aid them right now. And I really rather see them hit 1,000 for the end of the year than us hit 30,000. I would. Right? Because that's how I am. I'm that kind of guy. And plus, my Dick Pic Logic YouTube channel for my individual content is going to take off. I'm telling you, it's going to soar. Right? There you go. With a name like that, Anyways, folks, take care. Cyber, I love you. Right? And we'll see you, on Friday, Cyber, for Mac and Me.
Yes, sir.
There you go, sir. Loving it. Loving it. And Cyber, going to see Oppenheimer.
Yep, eventually.
Hell yeah, baby. Can't wait. I'm excited for you, bro. The armor is excited. What?